This is The Root Cellar on Pioneer 90.1, where regional history and family folklore come together with your hosts, Jim and Jan Stranley.
How many times have you attended a game at or just driven by the Hubert H. Humphrey Metrodome in Minneapolis? Most of us elderly folk know why the dome is named after this favorite Minnesota sun, but believe it or not, some of the younger listeners may not have a clue. The Root Cellar this time is on Hubert H. Humphrey, one of the people who helped shape our state. He is listed in the exhibit at the Minnesota Historical Building entitled Men 150, the 150 people, places, and things that helped shape our state, which coincided with the sesquicentennial celebration last year. Going back to the 1948 Democratic National Convention in Philadelphia, Hubert Humphrey, then the mayor of Minneapolis, took the podium. He was way before his time. He was speaking about civil rights, a subject many did not want to hear. Humphrey wanted the delegates to include a civil rights plank in the Democratic platform for the upcoming election. He said to the delegates, and I quote, "There are those who say to you, we are rushing the issue of civil rights. I say we are 172 years too late. Others say it is an infringement on states' rights," he continued. "The time has arrived for the Democratic Party to get out of the shadow of states' rights and walk forthrightly into the bright sunshine of human rights." Little did he realize at the time how much change would occur in the next 25 years. I had the distinct pleasure of hearing Hubert H. Humphrey speak. It was the beginning of recognizing Earth Day, and he spoke in Cloquet, Minnesota. I was the high school principal at Carlton, Minnesota, which is near Cloquet, and we took students over to hear him. I was impressed. First of all, he had what people referred to as a gift of gab. He was an eloquent speaker. He was now a senator once again from Minnesota after having been vice president to President Lyndon Johnson and a candidate for the presidency himself. And he was earnestly seeking support for protection of the environment. He left in me the importance of doing our part to save the planet. I still recycle to this day and try to do my part to help the environment. Here is a synopsis of this man's life. He was born in Wallace, South Dakota. His dad was the pharmacist and a community leader in Dolan, South Dakota. Hubert had to help his father in the drugstore business after they moved to Huron, South Dakota, but he was finally able to fulfill his dream and earned a degree in political science from the University of Minnesota. Later, he earned a master's degree from the University of Louisiana. While teaching at the University of Minnesota, he dabbled a little bit in Minneapolis politics. In the meantime, he married Muriel Buck in 1936, and they were married until his death in 1978. He ran for mayor of Minneapolis twice and won the second time, serving from 1945 to 1949. One of the most significant things he accomplished for Minnesota was to combine the Democratic Party with the Farm Labor Party, which became known as the DFL. It grew and strengthened and was a significant opponent to the Republican Party in our state. His speech that we mentioned earlier at the Democratic National Convention brought him into national prominence, and Minnesota elected Humphrey to the United States Senate in 1948, taking office in 1949. He was the first Democratic senator elected from the state of Minnesota since before the Civil War. Humphrey became known for his advocacy of liberal causes such as civil rights, arms control, a nuclear test ban, food stamps, and humanitarian foreign aid. His upbeat demeanor and cheerful personality and his forceful advocacy of liberal causes led him to be nicknamed the Happy Warrior by his Senate colleagues and political journalists, a name that was used against him during the Vietnam War era. Humphrey ran for the presidency twice and was not successful. He decided it would be unlikely for him to become president unless he served as vice president first. He became Lyndon Johnson's running mate in 1964 at the Democratic Convention under much fanfare by Johnson. Of course, Johnson did become president, winning over Barry Goldwater by a landslide. Hubert felt compelled as vice president to support President Johnson on the issue of Vietnam, especially after the president warned him that if he didn't, he would ruin his chances to run for president at the next Democratic convention. While everyone was stunned when LBJ made the announcement that he would not run for a second term, but it established an opportunity for Hubert Humphrey to fulfill his goal. He garnered lots of support despite the social unrest in the nation with anti-war protesters. Ed Muskie was his running mate, and they easily won the Democratic nomination at the party convention in Chicago. It might have not been so easy if Senator Robert Kennedy hadn't been assassinated. I remember watching the convention highlights on TV, and what remains in my memory is the thousands of anti-war protesters rioting and causing civil unrest. We watched as these young students were attacked and beaten by Chicago police. It made people feel uneasy about the whole situation. I wonder if the Democrats couldn't have done more about the riots, and the inaction by Humphrey and his party followers proved to be his downfall. Hubert Humphrey lost the general election to Richard Nixon. Humphrey returned to teaching following the election with the intention of not returning to politics. An unexpected opportunity changed his mind. Eugene McCarthy was up for re-election but declined to run. Humphrey threw his hat in the ring and won the election. He returned to the Senate in 1971 and was re-elected in 1976. Humphrey decided to try the presidency again in 1976, but lacked the support by some voters and the energy to fight for the position. Carter easily secured the nomination, and something that the public did not know, Humphrey already had learned he had terminal cancer. He died on January 13, 1978, at his home in Waverly, Minnesota. His body lay in state at both the U.S. Capitol and the Minnesota State Capitol. He is interred in Lakewood Cemetery in Minneapolis. Humphrey's wife, Muriel, was appointed by Minnesota Governors Rudy Perpich to serve in the U.S. Senate until a special election to fill the term could be held. Humphrey, Minnesota's favorite son, did help shape our state, our nation, and the world. Now here is Jen with some more Minnesota politics.
Hi. Well, while Hubert Humphrey can be called Minnesota's favorite son, I think Minnesota's favorite daughter could certainly be Koya Knutson. I would like to give credit to Dr. Diane Drake from Northland Community College for providing me this article that was written some time ago. And here we go. Koya Jezdal Knutson was born August 22, 1912. She served her nation in Congress from 1954 to 1958. But here's a little bit of Koya's story. When she graduated in 1934 from Concordia College, Moorhead, Minnesota, during the depth of the Depression, jobs were at a premium. Koya was one who landed a job, and she taught music and English at Penn, North Dakota, and later at Plummer, Minnesota. In 1940, she married Andy Knutson, a farmer near Oakley, Minnesota. She resigned her teaching job at nearby Plummer because married women were discouraged from teaching. In 1942, Koya began work for the Agricultural Adjustment Association, visiting farm families and delivering speeches to encourage food production for the war effort. She helped organize a neighborhood rural electrification association, the REA, to provide electrical power for their township. She directed the Zion Lutheran Church Choir. World War II altered attitudes toward women in the workplace, and in 1944, the school superintendent urged her to teach music and English in Oakley, and she again became a high school teacher. In 1944, she bought the Oakley Hotel and renamed it Andy's Hotel. Through the family's combined efforts and Andy's sister's home cooking, Andy's Hotel prospered in Oakley. In her personal life, Koya had suffered the heartache of miscarriages, and in 1948, she and Andy adopted 7-year-old Terrence, who had lived at a St. Paul orphanage. From 1940 to 1954, Koya was a community leader in Oakley. She served on the Red Lake County Welfare Board and as chairman of the Red Lake County DFL, as well as working on committees to establish the Oakley Medical Clinic, the Red Cross Branch, and the Community Chest Fund. With this kind of leadership, it was not surprising that she was elected Red Lake County DFL chairman in 1948. In 1949, DFL leaders asked her to run for the state legislature, representing Red Lake, Clearwater, and Pennington counties. In 1950, she defeated the incumbent and went on to serve in the Minnesota House with Sally Luther. They were the first women to serve there since 1943. Koya kept her campaign promises to work for state aid for education and health programs and was easily reelected in 1952, receiving the highest number of votes the 65th District had ever given a candidate. She could have easily been reelected, but Koya, who listened to Eleanor Roosevelt's challenge to women, decided she held the possibility of getting elected to Congress, where her efforts to help others could be expanded. Roosevelt had said, "We need more women in government," and Koya answered the call. In 1954, she surprised the DFL by challenging their endorsed candidate for the 9th District Congress seat. Koya defeated 4 other candidates in the primary, receiving twice as many votes as the endorsed DFL candidate, Curtis Olson. She went on to defeat 6-term Republican incumbent Harold Hagan in a stunning upset. Her successful career was cut short, however, in 1958 by the politically inspired letter from her husband Andy, described in headlines as, "Koya, come home." And you know what? That's another Root Cellar program all in itself. Someday we'll do that. Koya did not go home, however, but she stayed on in Washington, working for the Office of Civil Defense. In 1972, she retired to return to Minnesota to take care of her 2 grandchildren in order to enable her son and his wife, Barbara, to go to school and to work outside the home. We are indebted to Koya Knutson for the political career that she served so well. She was the first woman from Minnesota to ever be elected to Congress. She was a leader in her rural community. She was a mentor to girls and women of the 1950s. Koya was a woman who learned on the farm and at Concordia College the informal rules by which people live, a woman who realized that her labor and decision-making were crucial to the survival of her family, a woman who in the 1950s expanded her role to politics, where she could have a voice in societal change. Koya made a difference. Her greatest legislative achievement was passage of the section of the Title II defense bill that has enabled thousands of students to go to college by borrowing from the Federal Student Loan Fund. Koya studied Norway's higher education funding, contacted the Norwegian government to learn about their student loan program, and then presented her plan to Congress in 1958. Speaking on the floor of the House, Koya said, "As a public high school teacher for many years, I was distraught whenever any one of my students had the will but not the funds to go to college." Title II provides for long-term, low-interest loans to undergraduate and graduate students to enable them to continue their higher education. Title II of the National Defense Education Act of 1958 passed in the House without a dissenting vote and was signed into law by President Eisenhower. Coya also initiated a bill to fund cystic fibrosis research. Her bill, the first federal grant to support cystic fibrosis research, passed on May 8, 1958. At that time, cystic fibrosis was the third leading cause of death in children, and for the $1 million appropriation, Coya was honored by the Minneapolis-St. Paul chapter of the Cystic Fibrosis Foundation. Coya also worked hard for her district. She won a coveted seat on the Agriculture Committee and introduced 24 farm bills. She was instrumental in establishing credit programs for farm improvement and expansion. She worked for price supports for sugar beet farmers and supported soil conservation programs. She helped enlarge the federal school lunch program as a solution to farm surplus problems. Her first speech on the House floor pleaded for maintaining farm supports, declaring that, quote, "Adequate farm income is a task we must achieve for the economic health and welfare of the country," unquote. Coya Knutson proposed an omnibus education bill that would channel one-fourth of the defense budget into elementary and secondary education. Although this bill, nicknamed the Paul Bunyan Bill, did not pass during her term of office, a modified version of it passed during the Kennedy administration and became the first large-scale federal education program. It was Coya Knutson who proposed a federal income tax checkoff to support public funding for presidential campaigns, and this also became law after Coya's tenure. Coya Knutson died on October 10, 1996. She is well remembered. I need to mention that Coya Knutson was the first woman representative to Congress from Minnesota, but after her terms, Betty McCollum was elected in 2001, and she remains there yet, and also Michelle Bachmann in 2007, and she is also still in the House of Representatives. Muriel Humphrey was our first woman state senator, and she finished the term when her husband Hubert Humphrey passed away, so it was for the year of 1978. And then Amy Klobuchar was elected in 2007, and she remains as a senator of Minnesota. And I think I agree with Eleanor Roosevelt that, yes, we do need more women in government. And again, I give credit to Dr. Diane Drake from Northland Community College, who wrote this article about Coya Knutson several years ago. That's all for today. Bye.
The Root Cellar with Jim and Jan Stranley is a production of Pioneer 90.1. You can hear it Monday nights at 6:30 on The Kathy Erickson Show, and Wednesday mornings with Ben at 7:30 a.m.